This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Good evening. What you've just seen is part of a series of in total four pieces. They are all double projections. The series called Serious Games focuses on the fact that computer animations are being used to prepare for the war theater and at the same time as a means to cure traumatized soldiers or veterans. What I find so striking about the virtual Iraq, the imagery is called Virtual Iraq project, is first of all the very fact that the military uses these kind of images, animation images that look like computer game imagery. Why do they use images for therapy? Usually therapy is all about talking. And why animation images for therapy? If you take a close look at them, it is quite baffling on the one hand how abstract they are, but on the other hand you have all these striking details like the colored tiles from the mosque, the veiled woman, the light you can select in the desert, and so on. So when I first saw these images, I asked myself, why not documentary images taken from the reality of wars? How is it possible that these images obviously are the leading images nowadays, and they have even become part of the war industry? Of course, there's a lot to say about the status of the computer-generated animation image in the context of other image sorts within media history. Because, as I said, we do think that the computer-generated animation image is the leading image nowadays, so it's not photography or film anymore. But apart from this, we wanted to show you immersion, because this piece opens up nearly all the different layers we are interested in with regard to our exhibition project. And immersion actually was the conceptual starting point for our project that is now called the Image in Question, War Media Art. So with immersion, we have the documentary image next to the animation image. There's a relation to war, of course, and the piece was made for the art system, for art spaces. And content-wise, it opens up a lot of political, aesthetical, and sociological questions. Psychological, of course, as well. So immersion was a starting point of the exhibition project. And when I thought about which artworks could be well presented along with it, I immediately thought about the next piece we want to show you. It is a video called Larve Channel 2 by the Alexandria-based Egypt artist Wael Shafki. It is 10 minutes long, but we will present only a few minutes now because what interests us for the moment is first of all the method he uses, and you will grasp that immediately. I really admire this piece, I guess because of the way how the documentary image shines through the animated ones and the effect of it. For me, it has an almost humanistic aspect, of course. What Wael Shafki did is he went to the South Palestinian refugee camp in Jordan with his video camera, talked to this couple, and videotaped it. For his piece, he then kept the sound but used the rotoscope animation technique, and every frame of the interview has been manually traced and colored. Now, Haroon, maybe you can talk a little bit about the effect that is being produced with this method with regard to our topic, the image in question, and with regard to the difference of the computer game image, animation image in your piece, and this hand-drawn imagery we've seen here.
Yeah, so there's first the striking similarity that also this image tries to avoid the photographic image and the notion of being just a photographic, indexical, iconical depiction, but something constructed. On the other hand, you sense immediately that it is not done on with high-end technologies. It's done with manual labor, which you see, and doesn't come from a lab in South California, also that's also quite obvious. But there is something parallel in the aim, that obviously the photographic image doesn't give enough emphasis anymore. It's so easy to produce a video. You go anywhere, let people talk, there's a kind of devaluation happening to this kind of image, and therefore probably it's a very, very unique and also something only artists can do, to create emphasis by paying attention to every single frame here. It's so easy to run it in 10 minutes, you have a tape, but then later you spend months and deal with every single image. It's a little bit like doing things to compensate because for compensative reasons, because they can be done otherwise too easy. And in times of industrial production, one sometimes jumps back to artisanal production just to be more aware of what it means to produce an image. So there is this kind of similarity with a totally different aim. But as Antje said already, it is so astonishing if you use images not only for technical means, but could easily explain why computer animations are useful in the context of preparing for the war theater for training purposes. But the question why do you use them also to remember traumatic events, that alludes to the fact, tries to let us think that people nowadays don't remember films anymore, and when they die they will not see a film, as one always believes, but they will see a computer animation. And this is somehow the new step, and leads to this question of image in question. What is the leading image in the sense of the word Leitmotiv, coming from Germany? Light means leading, and so in the sense it's light build, light medium. We borrowed it from Kittler, who said that the computer has become the light medium, the leading medium, the machine swallowing all the other machines, and that is already part of the explanation why these images are taking over now, and that is an astonishing process, which we can study by looking at these different artistic approaches we have aligned them for this exhibition.
As you can see here, we are again concerned with the computer game imagery. We will show you again only a few minutes of work by Peggy Awesh. It's called She Puppet, and the full length of it would be 16 minutes. The footage that constitutes She Puppet was recorded directly from Awesh's computer as she played the video game Tomb Raider with the famous figure of Lara Croft. Different female voiceovers read from the work by Sun Ra, Juana Ruz, and Fernando Pessoa. I found a quite interesting remark in a review by John David Rhodes. I quote, "There is nothing real or realistic about the animated image of Lara Croft, and yet, through the repetitive acts of violence and self-destruction, she becomes real, and we find ourselves believing in her on the very basis of her being obsessively violated. In many ways, She Puppet is the most succinct and powerful essay on the position of women in the field of the cinematic vision since Laura Mulvey's Visual Pleasure and Narrative Cinema." End of quote. What I find interesting is that Rhodes addresses here the notion of real or realistic with regard to this highly artificial imagery. What he actually tells us is that also a montage of computer game imagery generates something like a reality effect, as an impression of an experienced truth. Of course, there's a lot to say about the notion of the real or realistic in art and film, about the tension between fiction and documentary, that sometimes in a documentary film, fiction triumphs over the real, or rather gives it its true dimension. And then it is also the other way around. In a fiction film, suddenly the real triumphs over the fiction. I would like to pose it as a very simple question to you, Haroon. Is the footage you shot, for example, in 92 Palms, where the soldiers are doing role games?
Only 29 Palms. Yeah.
I always make this mistake. 29 Palms, not 92. Okay. is this footage more real or less real than if you would have filmed a real therapy? And do you think that there's a different reality effect at play when you compare your virtual Iraq imagery with the Lara Croft one? Mm-hmm.
Of course, first of all, for ethical reasons, I don't think I would ever shoot a real therapeutical mm-hmm. session, of course, but I just have to say it in the beginning to prove that I'm a very ethical person. I was happy that the army never offered it, and that we could only shoot a workshop in which psychologists are training how to make use of these tools. And I don't know, were you all aware that it's all a training session while you were watching it, or many people are often seduced, and after a while they think, but it can be true. He must have experienced it, and so on. But that is the interesting effect about it, of course, that. One is aware that things don't have to be untrue just because somebody is saying them on a stage, on a theatrical stage or so. Yeah, and for me, this distanciation effect, which now, because we see it through the eyes of, through the mind of Bertolt Brecht, also the Greek theater has, that you don't show a battle, but that you talk about the battle, that you have somebody looking at it and talking about it and so on, and these guys are wearing kind of masks. They're seeing the image we are displaying on the other screen, but it looks as if they were even hiding their personality, as the Greek or Brechtian or Japanese theater also stages is, and that opens the terrible events to more to the imaginary and does not really display them. So the act of omission, although you have the means to show everything in detail. So the contrast is so interesting that sometimes Tarantino played with these kinds of saying, he said, and then you must play this role, cut, and you see him playing this role also, as if you would always have a direct access to imagination, and montage would just be this literal translation into syntax. And here that's also at play, that when they are working with these tools, and he says there was gunfire and somebody put on gunfire, and then the sky was blackened out, and then the sky is blackened out, and that is like a ideal book in which you can compare these two ideas of direct depiction, which is also a kind of symbolical mastery, of course. And that is, of course, when it comes to these children games, kids games, but for people who are eternally kids, then you see a lot about this symbolical mastery. And the weird thing, we will come later back to it, so animation film is always a little bit unreal, unbelievable, because everything is reversible, and you see the reversibility here. So when you make a mistake, you can continue immediately also. Yeah.
You have several lives.
You have several lives, yeah. This reversibility made in the times of hand-drawn animation was not valued very high. Now, of course, other things are at work. These images, if you would ask the army, why are they not using photographical depictions to memorize something, then of course because all these interactive things are possible. The images can fire back, to say it simply. And you
what
can
about
build
control.
Yeah, and you can build in all these what the instructor explained in the beginning. You can build in all these ambushes and so on, but IEDs exploding and so on. We have the, all this register of possibilities how to intervene into the intended, remembered traumatic scenes.
So I think we should come to the next example and finally back to the documentary, and this would be chapter number 7. So I showed you the entire chapter. It's all persons telling their stories with objects they choose, which with which they memorize the war, and I didn't want to cut her, so therefore it was a bit longer. So here we have the tension in question, the image in question, the other way around. On the one hand, we have the witness, the testimonies, and the real-time effect. Since Lamia filmed the stories in one take with no cuts, the result is kind of magic of immediacy. So on the one hand, Jurek wants to explore the reality of war and how people experienced it. But at the same time, I think she asked two linked questions. What is memory and what is a documentary as a genre of fiction? I'm alluding to the question of the fiction of memory. For me, Lamia's work is a wonderful example for the fact that information is not and cannot be memory. Memory is a tale, a collection, a certain arrangement of objects, traces, signs.
Yeah, so perhaps in reverse one could say I would be very unhappy if there would be a software which could store and predict my traumas. I hope my traumas are more original than what can be offered in a display. But if one thinks about these images, I talked about the computer-generated images, which can be where you can navigate through, which are interactive, which are based on real data. Which you have collected about a certain country, you see that those are images of mastery, they are power images. That's very simple. Sometimes in television, not in television, sometimes in the internet and then in television, there are images from opposing forces which are surprising in a way, guerrilla images, but those are never computer-generated images. That is always related to power and still monopolized by power. Perhaps these things will change in some years, but in the moment that's the case. And if you do something guerrilla-like, you do it with a handheld camera nowadays by testifying something, by proving something. Let's say like Rodney King video 20 years back. And the method of Lamia's filmmaking is to say we are not talking from a position of power. We are doing the opposite, and in this context, this sometimes devalued method of recording and this automatic camera and so on, where it's not even difficult to shoot it. You don't even have to visit a community school to make it and so on. And all this powerlessness can also have a strong emphasis. In this context, it strives for this very effect. And as I find, that works well.
Yeah, and of course it's also an archive project because she made it over many years, and it's kind of a collection of stories and archiving.
Perhaps one could just add this powerlessness also consists and comes from the fact that these memories don't even feed into into a predominant discourse. So they are really these dispersed private memories, and of course there must be a way of for us how to read them, but they don't feed the discourse that they say those are the typical victims and so on. It's difficult to align them to other discourses, and that makes all this position of non-ambitious powerlessness still stronger.
Okay, now on the track of the documentary, this is a work we included in the exhibition, a documentary photography. I can show them to you. It's we choose four images, but it's a bigger series consisting of up to 30. So could we put it like this? Jorege's Objects of War is primarily concerned with the creation of memory, whereas Fazal Shaikh's work is primarily concerned with the preservation of memory. As is written by Paul Celan, nobody wears witness for the witness. The political implication here is, of course, that these dead, beloved ones cannot be counted just as numbers or casualties. Judith Butler just put out a brilliant book called Frames of War, When is Life Grievable? And here Butler is, you can really say, upset about the fact that within the war machinery, its discourses of justification, there's suddenly this division line being made between people whose loss is regarded as a loss and people whose loss is not regarded as a loss. And this applies not only to individuals, but also to entire populations, like the civilian deaths in the Gaza, where populations were framed by the tactics of war, and living humans became cast as instruments, blockades, targets, and shields. In her words, forms of racism, instituted and active at the level of perception, tend to produce iconic versions of populations who are eminently grievable, and others whose loss is no loss and who remain ungrievable. So Fazal's work has a lot to do with these political, ethical questions, because in his case here, these Afghan dead are hardly counted as grievable losses. And this is, of course, his motivation to insist also on the single individual. One could say that he's creating a counter-archive. And I think we can just go further on. Are we in time? Or this is another example of documentary photography we like a lot. It's one of your favorites, I guess. Let me show it to you. So this is an installation view, how it is presented together with this. What is Feldbett? Military bat? What is Feldbett?
There was a
car.
Okay, yeah. So this is part of the piece. Alan Sekular's piece can be discussed in a similar context as Fazal Shaikh's, actually, though Sekular's starting point was another one. Sekular refers to the ideology of supposedly clean, remote control, disembodied warfare launched during the first Gulf War of 1991. And I think you can regard his photographs as well as a counter-archive of contrasting pictures of this disembodied warfare, this almost erotical delight with which all the people are touching these weapons. I think you wanted to say something about the montage and series.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is that having one point of view and nearly predicting that everybody will react and nearly do the same, also this is a wonderful way for a cinematographic scene also, yeah, because then you don't have to have a narration. It is really the form which constitutes the main structural moment in a sequence, yeah? That's also the case here with the still images. So first the details. There was a victory celebration in Southern California on a base close to Los Angeles, and 100,000 people came, and he visited too, and then he realized that they all tried to touch, and some even reached into these guns. They put their hands into these guns, which is not advisable because not because it would fire, but they used radioactive munition because they wanted to trace them back. They are not only counting bodies; they are also counting the ammunition and want to know where it dropped and so on. And therefore, one should wash one's hand after having touched it. So the aspect is, of course, that somehow this first Gulf War was so overly abstract, and it was also presented in the media with these very abstract images. You always saw these images from the point of view of a surveillance camera at a balloon, or in a satellite, in a plane, or sometimes even in the nozzle of a projectile which was aiming towards a target. So it really looked like a computerized war, and probably therefore this drive was so strong to reconstitute something haptical by touching at least the arms which had won this wonderful battle. And you all know that the president, after all this enthusiasm, was not re-elected some years later, perhaps because this tactical effect was not strong enough. This war didn't become believable. It didn't inscribe itself in the way other wars would have done years earlier. But at least you see, and also the photography tries to show that many of them try to become soldiers while standing there by showing their shirtless torsos, and then they are trying to understand by touching, which is I've explained it already why how I read it also. Yeah.
So I think we come to a close now. These were some examples of the exhibition. This exhibition will tour, and in Boston it will be a first station, relatively small. So we will present 12 pieces by 9 artists, and what we left out now, just for pragmatical reasons, is just to give you the full picture. We show a relatively unknown, I think, masterpiece by Jean-Luc Godard called Je vous salue Sarajevo. It's 2 minutes. Then there's another piece by Haroon included from the Serious Games series called Watson's Down. And we have included 2 works by Kota Etzava called Dead Troops Talk and The History of Photography Remix. And
yeah, so perhaps one could say that this idea of image and question and war, that's not chosen arbitrarily. If there is this shift from the photographic image to the computer image, then that has a lot to do with war, with the wars in the last 20 years, because they have become weapons on their own, not in this metaphorical sense as it was always the case with propaganda, but they really are means of leading the war. They are images which are not only depicting, they are also measuring. They are operational images used how to aim at something, how to track something, how to recognize something. And that has, of course, changed the status of the image, and therefore it's not arbitrarily to see what why don't we look at this problem in the context of war. It has to do, it has deeply affected the status of the image, and many artists have responded to it.
As you did.
So we are open to for questions and answers. No, for questions and you for answers. Of course, also for comments. Also,
You mentioned in the beginning how you felt that the images presented in, I forget the title of the piece,
Larvae, from the refugee camp. Yeah.
You talked about how that piece emphasized what the subjects were describing their experiences. And I'm wondering, and you also said that video tends to devalue what is being recorded. And do you think that there's going to be some kind of backlash against the type of inexpensive, ubiquitous video we see on YouTube, television? And where will that go if there is some kind of backlash? Do we need something that's more personalized? Do we need something that's manipulated or done by hand or something that's made special?
Yeah, not general, probably. So probably we are in a very early early stage, now only some years ago, it started that using a camera is not so different from writing a text or talking or so. That is still a long way to go. We see it that these films are still in a very early state. If there's something like a evolution of cinematography or so, they are not. They are still pre-Griffiths, I would say. therefore, I can't say. I can't predict what will happen or so. But I just think that it's not such a question of shot, counter shot, or whatever, and not about the means. It's just like we have many texts we could read, and we know how to select them. And the criteria are a bit missing in the moment; they are shifting. We don't know with all these blogs and the web what should we read, and whom can we trust? Can we sense already that something is working? I don't mean these rules should be fixed also. Of course, it's great if they are shifting also, but that seems to be this overproduction in the state we are in the moment also.
You know, I was really struck by the distantiation of the image that you're tracking. Namely, we don't trust images the way that we used to, and therefore reality, in a sense, has become so mind-boggling that trust the animated image more than we trust reality being able to be imaged. Hence, even in the war games or in the Palestinian camp, the image is distantiated by, and I think that's one of the undercurrents of the artistic project, the image being distantiated by the producer. But what I was struck by was that the sound is still what gives us the reality, right?
Yes.
We have, that's not constructed sound. The mortars coming in are real mortar, that's the sound of a real mortar, or the voice of the refugee, the Palestinian refugee, is the real voice. Why do we, maybe I'll flip it around and ask why we trust sound so much more today than the image?
Yeah, obviously, you're totally right. That's also a flaw. And Daniel Huillier said it, that hardly anybody is experimental with sound. One is only experimental with images also, and dares to be with images. So if we look at a standard film 40 years ago and which complicated ways of narration are possible today and have become nearly standard. But with the sound, although it's very elaborate and has options that didn't have 30 years back, when the sound was very selective and you only heard the steps and only one clock in a room, I wouldn't say that it has. It is very indexical. Yeah, it's really an imitation of the real. There's no there's no translation in the way how sounds are used, with the exception of music also, but one could make music out of the sounds also, and this is all missing, and it's one of the biggest flaws of contemporary film development, I would say. What do you think?
I also thought about this question, but I think that this is the charm of the piece, that he kept the original sound, so that you have this kind of, you have the
documentary
as a trace in the piece. I also thought about this wonderful film from Israel, what's it called?
Waltzing with Bashir.
I think many of you will have seen it. It's the same effect. There's also very documentary kind of sound, and you can really see when there are, for example, interview scenes, you can really see the real image, like you can imagine how it is, and this abstraction and transformation, maybe it's also because we are really tired of this bad talking heads, BBC quality. Do we want to see this anymore? So I think this is also, of course, an artistic strategy to distanciate itself from here.
But, I mean, I was also curious, because at least I found that when looking at the animated or rotoscope images, that I was focusing on the human subject and listening. Whereas when the documentary images come up, I found myself looking more at the setting, at the background, you know, thinking, well, where is she? She's obviously in a, you know, fairly upper middle class or whatever. I mean, there are all those other little details which I think have been lost through the animation, that we don't focus more on the human subject and that we don't look at the details. And so much of documentary are precisely those other things that the camera can capture. I mean, certainly when you yourself, you know, in Images of the War, referred to where you said, you know, you're always looking at something, but what happens if you're not looking at what you're supposed to be looking at? What can you find?
Yeah, I agree.
I think this is even voluntary. It's to concentrate on certain details and to leave out others makes this strange effect that it's almost hyper-realistic. I mean, the animation now, whereas the real documentary image is too crowded. So, yeah.
Yes, please. Sorry.
There's so many.
There are so many. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Is there a question for reception? Do you find that, especially speaking of video games and the video game generated images in these worlds, that within a lot of sort of different video games are very similar, is there a generational difference between someone who grew up playing video games versus someone who might see them for the first time when their children are playing video games?
I guess other people can answer this better than we can.
Do you have kids playing video games?
Yeah, of course.
My kids are good. They read fairy tales. Yeah.
So I don't know. Okay. I guess yes, but.
But in your experience, people don't react differently to the movie.
I only learned from the therapist. Found it very interesting that even if it's not so sure if you really can candle a memory by showing a certain set of images. Of course, there are many reasons for a trauma, and why you have only 15 or 20 sets which you can play for the patient. So if that is really working is a different question, but they said it's already therefore successful because the so-called veterans, they can be 23 years old, they don't want to say, I'm going to a shrink today, but if they say, I'm going to a video game, then we are talking about it, that was a more believable healing process, and somehow it appealed to them to talk about it then. So this kind of familiarity with these kinds of images or tools, but others said, they are just disappointing, this stuff, because the commercial games, they invest 100 million now in, more than into a feature film, and they have, you know how poor the Ministry of Defense is. So.
Yeah, I'd like to hear a little bit more about the process of using the video simulation in the therapeutic part of the process, because what wasn't entirely clear to me was whether the narrative, the soldier's, you know, recollection precedes the visualization, because you have them sort of synchronized, as you were saying earlier. There's this, you know, kind of mastery film that gets produced out of it, but. I mean, is that even possible? Doesn't there have to be an initial telling, and then there's the going into, and then it's, okay, we're going to go relive?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the reason why I bring this up is that it makes me wonder about this blanket claim about the difference between the digital image and previous modes, photographic and so on. Because, for instance, I mean, there's a film I've seen that's in the British Film Institute from World War I about the treatment of war neuroses, where... Yeah, the soldiers are coming back, they're shell-shocked, they have various pathological gates. They're subjected to a therapeutic process, which involves mostly massage. And then they're asked to reenact the battle they first suffered these traumas. So they're at least, I mean, it's not precisely mediated through film, but they're at least, this idea of reenactment for a long time has been a kind of a prevalent thing within psychoanalytic therapy. So I'm just curious if you could, you know, answer those two questions. One, more precisely about the process, and then two, this issue of not just the discontinuity, but also continuities with previous sort of mediations.
Yeah. So one thing is very simple. You are talking about Freud, and this is not Freud. This Russian Pavlov, yeah, sorry. This is based on Pavlov. So they think that if you learn that you can retell the story and you don't bleed, then you will understand that it's not so bad. You can will dare to retell it, and then you get rid of the trauma. That's the theoretical basis, aiming at a certain mechanics of the soul. I don't want to judge about it. So, therefore, the other thing is that here, of course, they are complying because they want to. They are therapists. They want to show and want to believe that this tool works. It can always happen that the patient says, "No, there were no palms. I don't want to see palms here or whatever." So, probably, it can only work that first the patient tells what he or she has experienced, and they create a similar scenario, and perhaps when retelling it the second time, they want to do it very often also, then the therapist can add something to it or surprise even the patient. But in the beginning, of course, they are just doing what the patient tells. They are building it, the scenario up step by step. When he says we got hit by an IED, then he tries to hit him by an IED.
I was just going to comment that I found myself really oddly dislocated as a viewer watching that in this really interesting way, because I kept finding that I was trying to, first of all, I was looking upon the virtual imagery and trying to imagine what he was seeing, because his eyes are covered. And so then he's narrating a story, and I'm trying to imagine what he's seeing, but being cued only by this virtual imagery, so there's actually no, you know, where is the real in that?
Yeah,
and so I found that really
fascinating.
And also, I teach a class at Temple with freshmen, we just watched scenes from the Hurt Locker, we were just talking about
And
I kept thinking about how that street reminded me of, you know, we were talking about realism and war, and so we're flesh to, you know, that scene that was shot in Jordan, I guess. In the Hurt Locker, it was Jordan, yes. So it was just really interesting about the real, you know, the having to imagine and having to constantly place oneself in that, into that narrative to try to find the real in that, rather than, you know, a documentary image which actually tries to say, oh, this is the real. We're going to simulate this. We're going to give you the shaky cam, and that's going to be the real. You know, this was interesting.
Yeah, so therefore I also switched off the image on the left channel when he was really engaged in his narration, because I thought it's better now only to see him. And on the stage I would have darkened the stage and there would only be one beam on him or so. Yeah, so that was quite dissimilar, but it has the reasons you explained. It includes them, yeah.
From the actual places that they were at? So
yeah, supposedly. So they have a certain set of options. They have the city, as he explains in the beginning, and cityscape, and also some interiors, and then they have this second
weather
set.
And the weather, you can choose.
Yeah. The second set is traveling in a Humvee through a desert. In the case of virtual Iraq, yeah? Because those are the things where, the locations where most of the things happen. There are no battles, so there are.
So in the virtual imagery, it's actually created from reconnaissance, or sort of kind of, they actually scale, and it's pretty,
No.
Is it no longer photographic? It's based on it, but it's no longer, well, I guess you start with photographic.
No, I don't think so. In the case of images where they really, which they use for exercise, there they really, the images are really based on real data.
Real data.
A hill is a hill, and
it's physical data.
Yeah.
Measurement.
Yeah, it's measurement. Yeah. They measure the country of Iraq and Afghanistan, and then they say, because here's a hill, and there's a slope, and there's a street, and so on. That is true, but here, of course, it's. There's even no shade, no shadow. Have you seen? There's no shadow in these images. Also, there's a sun.
The future of media through testifying memory, traumas, is computer generated, not photographic. Does that leave any room for a neat, closed narrative? Man in your film who repeats his experience and the ability to create new iterations over and over again with different nuances. Is there ever a point at which that subject will be finished with a story that has a beginning, a middle, and most importantly, an ending?
Yeah, that's really a good question, but I can't answer it. Can you?
These predictions are a bit difficult.
No, but I think the quality of the question is that we believe that it reveals on what reveals something of our belief on what narratives are based, and of course. Since there's cinema, there's also this knowledge that you shouldn't show everything, that you should show the possibility, the promise of showing everything, but not everything. And of course, along these lines, I think there's also still space for imagination, also with computer-generated images. I don't want to create a pessimistic view just because these toys are around.
Okay. On that note, thank you.
Okay, thank you.